Jeff Woods, longtime trainer, joins us once again. Woods, how are you?
I'm not bad, Mr. Gregor. How about you?
I am. I'm well. You golfed yet this year? I know you're quite the golfer. How's your golf game?
Non-existent, to be honest. I haven't been out yet, but next Friday, I'm going to give the Mayfair a try.
Oh, well, geez. Bring a few extra balls.
So what's up? What do you want to talk about?
Today, I want to discuss repetition speed. I had some guys text in last week wondering, something we touched on very briefly a few weeks ago was, eccentric lifting, when you're doing an easiest definition to describe for our listeners is, so you push the bar up when you're on the bench press, but then when it comes down, decentric loading and going slower or faster, does it seriously make a difference?
Well, it certainly does. And I guess if I could maybe just explain, failure or fatigue principles, where you're going to get the most out of your strength training, get stronger, and potentially reduce risk of injury, you have to make muscle fail at three different levels. Concentrically, you have to make it then fail isometrically and eccentrically. So I'm going to use just a bicep curl as the example. So if your hands are down by your side and you're going to bend your elbow and have your hand track up to your shoulder, that shortening of your bicep muscle, that's the concentric action. Okay. So if you've got a weight in your hands, that's where your strength training athlete is going to fail first, concentrically. Then, let's say you're on your way back down with that bicep curl and you stop halfway, Jason. That's your static tension or your isometric stress. So trying to hold it there, that's where it's going to fail next. Then from that point, once it's fatigued, eccentrically, as your elbow starts to straighten and it goes all the way back down and your elbow's fully extended, that lengthening of your bicep muscle, that's your eccentric lengthening tension. So once it's failed there, you've critically fatigued muscle. And if you took that approach with every single muscle group throughout your body, you're going to get the very most out of your strength training.
Now, you can't fail them all at once, correct? You have to do it at different. So that's why you need a slow decentric load then on a bench press, for instance, or even on a bicep curl coming down slow?
Yeah, and now, too, there's some exceptions to this, Jason, as well. So, for example, let's say we're talking about a novice athlete moving into weight training or going to participate in any physical activity, and it's new for you. All of your actions should be slow and controlled, probably to a four-count cadence either way. So if you're doing walking lunges or you're learning how to play badminton, I don't care what it is, like your swing speed, your strokes, everything should be more methodical, more controlled, not too ballistic, so that you don't end up with some sort of muscular strain or some sort of inflammatory response. So in weight training, it's no different. If you're a novice, a really slow eccentric tension and a really slow concentric. So like a 1, 2, 3, 4 count each way would be advisable for somebody just starting.
Okay, so what about athletes who've been training, or let's say our listeners now, guys, they've been, a guy or gal been working out for 7 or 8 months, they feel pretty comfortable with it. Should they be training the speed that they do their reps at, and what's the benefit of that?
Okay, and they should. It should be, like, it's often an overlooked component of a strength training program. So let's say we've got that scenario you just explained, and you're, maybe athletic. You should probably be looking at what we call some sort of periodized training model. So in phase one, just doing what we did, the 4-count cadence either way, that would last for 4 to 6 weeks. Now you're going into a second phase of training. That's going to last for about 6 weeks, but now we're going to experiment with the change in repetition. So let's say you're doing that bench press you talked about. You're going to push your bench press load up. You're going to go to a 2-count. And then on the way back down, you're going to go to a 4-count because we want to be faster and more dynamic. So the faster you go, the more motor units you would force to work, and you would force fast twitch muscle fiber to work also. So that is a function of bar speed and load together. So if your athlete wants to be stronger and more efficient and a little bit more reactive, it would be important to get a little bit faster with the bar. Now, consequently, maybe even a third phase of training, you're going to go for 6 weeks. And let's say we're talking about an athlete or somebody who's going to start to play some sort of competitive season, whatever the sport, you might actually want to go to a one count cadence. So you're going to push up to one and come back down to one as well on that bench press. So now we're really making you reactive. We're forcing more fast twitch muscle fiber to work. And it's going to be challenging as well, because if you're doing any series of repetitions moving that quick, you're expending a lot of energy at the same time.
That's what I was going to ask you. Jeff Woods from Custom Fit joins us. When we speed up our repetition, should we expect a decrease in the load that we're able to push?
Well, I guess for someone with a lack of experience, yes. But
okay.
if we're talking about maximal effort weightlifting athletes who would go into a competition to do a maximal effort, like in bench press or a deadlift or something like that, obviously they're going to be doing world-class weight loads, and they're going to be moving fairly quick as well, because they don't want to keep tension on their body for an extended period of time, because that would inhibit their ability to do that maximal effort. So they do work pretty quick on purpose, but it wouldn't be advisable for most.
Okay. Jeff Woods, join us. Now, let's say you're trying to rehab injured muscles. You're coming back and you get given the green light by the doc. Does speed of repetition benefit, pros or cons, when it comes to injured muscles?
Yeah, absolutely it does. And there's lots of research to support this. So let's say that you've injured a hamstring, and the hamstrings are injured frequently by sprinters and even by long-distance runners. So you go through your convalescence period of rest. Now you're coming back, and the one area that you should really focus on in your strength training for your hamstrings would be that lengthening phase of a repetition. So let's say that you're on a leg curl machine, and you contract your hamstrings on the leg curl machine, and then letting your knees extend nice and straight, and as your heels go back down, your hamstring muscle is lengthening. So you'd want to do that to a very slow cadence, maybe with a lighter weight starting off, but you might be working to a 7, 8, or even a 10-second release to fully extend that muscle. So again, the evidence points to that type of focus having a significant long-term effect to making that muscle stronger, and you're less likely to re-injure that hamstring because you're going to make it stronger and it'll tolerate more force.
You had mentioned earlier how concentric, isometric, and eccentric failure is important. Why do we need to fail in order for us to benefit?
The key to success, Jason, with strength training is that you have to impose enough stress for an adaptation to take place. If you don't make the muscle tissue fail at all three of those levels, you won't get the maximal benefit of adaptation. So if your goal is to get stronger and move more weight, get stronger and faster and reduce injury, that's why it would be important. Because unless you're making it fail at all three levels, you're sort of minimizing the amount of adaptation that could take place.
And one last one, out of concentric, isometric, and eccentric, which is the one that's the most difficult to fatigue?
The eccentric component.
Okay. Now, why is that?
Well, because, I mean, as the load is going down, I mean, if I was to help you do a bicep curl with, I'll say, 150 pounds, I'd help you get it up, but you could probably lower it under some control on your own.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah,
you wouldn't be able to maintain the two others. Do we have 30 seconds left?
Yeah.
Okay, one other thing I wanted to talk about just briefly was weighted warm-up swings. And I see this all the time, you know, guys hitting the golf course, they'll put two or three golf clubs in their hand and they'll start to swing, you know, thinking that when they put that club in their hand, they're going to swing a whole lot faster. You'll see guys on Major League Baseball tonight, when the guys tune in, they'll go to the batter's on deck circle, they'll throw the donut on, the weighted donut, and they'll swing. It does exactly the opposite, has the opposite effect to what they think. They think they're going to swing faster as a result. That weighted swing actually forces slow twitch muscle fiber to work, which throws off their timing and actually slows down their swing speeds in both of those sports. So for all our amateurs out there, do your strength training on separate days away from hitting the golf course. Your best warm-up is just going to be with the bat, or it's just going to be with the golf club. You're far better off. Your timing will be better.
Jeff, I love it, man. As always, great to talk to you. We'll do it again soon.
That sounds good, Gregor. Take care.